Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
It's an awful anniversary to have to mark, but it's 4 years since the unprovoked invasion of Ukraine by Russia. In military terms, it's been a disaster for Putin, with an estimated 300,000 Russians having died in order to capture only a fifth of eastern Ukraine. Amazingly, the Ukrainian economy has stabilized and continues to function as it had to switch to a war economy, producing new cutting-edge drone technology. Despite huge sanctions, the Russian economy has not collapsed, but is under severe strain. And joining me now to discuss this is the Russia expert Jason Corcoran, whose new book, Leaving Russia, will be published in April. We also have the communications expert Cormac Smith, who has worked for the British and Ukrainian governments and knows the latter very well. He's also part of the advocacy group Defence on the Brink. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Joe.
Cormac.
Good morning, Joe.
Cormac, can I go to you first, please? You have spent a lot of time in Ukraine. You have a lot of contacts there. What's it like at the moment?
It's grim, Joe. But I think the most impressive thing is the determination of the people. And I always start this by going back to a quote from a man called Oleksiy Mikheyev, who is currently Ukraine's ambassador in Berlin. And Oleksiy is a very close friend. And within the first few weeks of this horrible war or further invasion, Oleksiy said to me on the phone one day, he said, "Cormac, it's very simple. If Russia stops fighting, there will be no war. If Ukraine stops fighting, there will be no Ukraine." And everybody I speak to, and I was speaking to my closest friend living in Kyiv, a man who sleeps in his bath at night and frequently has his whole building rocked from explosions. What impresses me is the absolute steely determination, because, you know, the Ukrainian people know that this is existential. And the reason that Ukraine has held out has not just been because of Volodymyr Zelensky. It has not just been because of the heroics of the Ukrainian armed forces. It's been because of the combination of all three working in unison, the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government and the leadership they've shown and the Ukrainian armed forces. It's those three working in unison. That's what you need to win a war.
Okay, we'll come to the Ukrainian economy in a moment, Cormac, but I'm going to bring in Jason Corcoran, who has spent a lot of time in Russia and, of course, has this book about Russia coming out pretty shortly. We'll talk about the Russian economy in a moment. First of all, based on your contacts with the country, what's it like there?
Well, in Moscow, where I spent 14 years, I mean, people are living in denial. I was speaking to my mother-in-law recently, and she said, "Narod stal zloy," the nation has become evil. So people are fed up with the war, but they're not suffering anything like what Cormac has described, the people who are being bombed, carpet bombed daily in Kyiv and Lviv and Kharkiv and right across Ukraine. But they're fed up with war and they want war to stop. And, you know, as for the Russian economy, I would liken it, Joe, to a Soviet-era apartment block. You have the shiny new facade outside, the lights are on, the parties are still carrying on in Moscow, in central Moscow. But beneath that facade, the lift is on the blink, the wiring is faulty, and there are serious cracks underneath the foundation of the plastering.
Okay. We'll come to the economy in a little bit more detail, but the Russian people, how do they tolerate losing 1,000 soldiers almost every day?
Mm-hmm. The thing is, so these soldiers who are volunteering from the front line, they are actually volunteering because they're being lured by signing on bonuses of 3 million rubles, which in our money, Joe, is 33,000 euros, which is a significant amount of money. And if they come back in a coffin, it's called coffin money, their relatives get 50 grand. And they're coming from the poor regions. They're not coming from Moscow. They're not coming from St. Petersburg.
They come from Dagestan and other places.
Dagestan, Buryatia. They're coming from Tatarstan, Bashkiristan, all these poor areas where there's not many choices because the mines are closing down, the coal mines are closing down. and the other industries, heavy industries, are also, if the heavy industries are not serving Putin's war economy, they're closing down because of the crippling interest rates to refinance their debts, which is 15%, 15.5%, and for a long time was 21%.
Okay. And the economy.
Yeah.
In a little bit more detail, interest rates are still quite high. Inflation is very high.
Yeah.
And that must be eroding spending power. And of course, you can't get a lot of the Western goods that they would have been buying.
You can probably get most of them, Joe, most of these goods, but at seriously inflated rates because they've got to come through Kyrgyzstan, Kazakhstan, Armenia. And it's like the EU is going after these countries, but it's like whack-a-mole. I think the key point really for Russia's economy is that oil price is tanking and Russia's benchmark oil price is Urals. And Urals at the moment is 42...
Because they won't price it in dollars.
They won't price it in dollars. Yeah. They can't. So at the moment, Urals is priced at $42 a barrel. It was as low as $35 a barrel last month. Russia's break-even point for oil in its budget is $57. Mm. But most analysts say they actually need it to be $90 to $100 so they don't widen their deficit. It was already at 2.7%. Relative to GDP.
So they're losing, for every barrel of oil they're selling, they're losing quite a bit of money.
Absolutely. And Joe, we saw last month that their revenues from oil and gas had halved compared to a year ago. And they depend on the sale of hydrocarbons for 35% of their federal revenues.
Okay. Well, listen, stay with us, Cormac, for a bit. And stay with us, Cormac Smith and Jason Corcoran. We're going to take a quick break.
Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
And we're speaking to the Russia expert, Jason Corcoran, who is also the author of the forthcoming book, Leaving Russia, How Putin Forced a Nation's Future to Flee. And we're also speaking to the Ukraine expert, Cormac Smith, who's a member of the Defence on the Brink advocacy group. Cormac, can I go to you, please, about the Ukrainian economy? You've spoken about the impact on individuals, Cormac. What's the economy doing? Because obviously it's on a war footing.
Yeah, look, I would love to say that there is a miracle happening in the Ukrainian economy. There isn't. It's on life support. However, I think we need to see in the first year of this war, the GDP shrunk by over 29%. Now, it has actually, in the teeth of this war, it has been recovering at a rate of anywhere between 2 and 4% per year. I spoke to a man called Peter Dickinson, who edits an English language business journal in Ukraine. He's a Brit, he's lived out there for over 20 years and a friend of mine from my time there. And he said, you know, one of the bright lights on the horizon, it has recently been agreed that Ukraine is going to start exporting armaments. Mm. So successful has their armaments industry been. And this is probably expected to bring in between $1 billion and $2 billion in the next year to the Ukrainian economy. But I think the important point to make is the economy is still on life support and it is dependent on our support. And that's the key thing that people have to they are depending on our support to keep them afloat.
And if and when this war ends, and obviously we want it to end as soon as possible, Ukraine will be a defense giant in Europe because it will have fought a kinetic war against a giant army for 4 years and will probably be exporting drone technology that the rest of us haven't even thought of yet.
2 points I would make there. Look, I started saying in 2016 when I went out and started working at the heart of the Ukrainian government, it was so obvious that Ukraine, the largest country by landmass in Europe, if you exclude Russia, is a sleeping giant. It, you know, it was only one of 15 Soviet republics. It accounted for 40% of the GDP of the USSR. This is one of the reasons that Putin invaded. He wants it back for the riches and the potential it has. Ukraine has huge potential. They also, as you quite rightly said, Ukraine is, I would say, the strongest army in Europe today. probably the strongest, the second strongest army on the planet, but certainly man for man, with the experience they have and the grit that they have shown for the last 4 years, man for man and woman for woman, one of the most potent fighting forces on the face of the earth.
And if if they're allowed to join the European Union, and there is talk about them joining kind of much quicker than scheduled, and potentially even next year, would they have an outsized role within that European Union, given that defence capability?
Well, look, I believe they would. And while you're on it, I believe that they should also be taken into NATO, because Ukraine and NATO, especially with the United States stepping back and having become a totally unreliable security partner, NATO has become stronger with the addition of Finland and Sweden. Mm. My God, if Ukraine was to join NATO, how much stronger that would make NATO. So I believe in the relatively short term, if we could only have the vision in Europe that Ukraine has the potential to make Europe economically much stronger and militarily far more powerful and far more of a deterrent to a revanchist Russia.
Okay, well, let's bring in back in Jason Corcoran. In your book, Leaving Russia, you talk about the brightest Russian who fled the state when conscription started. Yeah. Where do they go, and what's going to happen to them?
So an estimated, Joe, 1 to 1.5 million of Russia's best and brightest fled. Some of them went to the near abroad, which is the former CIS. They went to Armenia and Georgia, because if you couldn't get visas to the West. And those who could get visas, who had financial resources, went to Dubai, and they went to the Baltics, and then further afield, some of them even ended up in Argentina and Mexico. And I traveled to these places. I traveled to Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, to the Balkans, to the Baltics, to Berlin, to London, to meet with my former contacts and see how they're struggling to start again, to resettle. They're still building networks overseas, you know, of expatriate Russians. And a lot of them will never go back. Even if they told me, even if there is regime change, which is an absolute sort of...
So they're not Putinistas?
Oh, absolutely not. No, right. 100% not Putinistas. The reason why they fled after the full-scale invasion was because they didn't want Russia bombing Ukraine, their Slavic neighbor, in their name. And then after the mobilization, even more fled because they didn't want to serve, you know, sort of be cannon fodder for this invasion, illegal invasion. So they're not going back. And like, and meanwhile, Putin has been calling of this as a purification of Russian society. The very same rhetoric that Lenin used 100 years ago when the Bolsheviks forced philosophers, the so-called philosophers, on ships out of Petrograd. So they were the best and brightest 100 years ago. And it's just uncanny and so tragic to see that history repeat itself.
Mm-hmm. And if and when Putin, you know, ceases to be president, is Russia ever going to be a fully functioning democracy?
You know, there was a window, Joe, when I first arrived in Russia in 2005, 2006, there was a sense that Russia could be truly European, could be a European democratic partner. And it was such an exciting place to be. The biggest IPOs in the world were happening out of Russia, massive M&A deals. And there was a consumer spending boom. And like, okay, the guys at the top, the kleptocrats, were stealing, but it was filtering down. And ordinary, there was an emergence for the first time of middle-class Russians who were traveling overseas and who were integrating and they were building institutional credibility. But that was destroyed steadily, first with the invasion of Georgia in 2008, and then subsequently with, you know, the military involvement in Syria, and then also with the annexation of Crimea in 2014. And then, you know, it's been just backsliding ever since.
Final question for you, Cormac Smith. Expert on Ukraine, do you think in your head, not in your heart, but in your head, that this war will end this year?
No, I don't, because there is absolutely no sign that Putin wants to end this war. At the moment, the only person that can press the button to end it is Donald Trump. Right. And Donald Trump has shown himself for the last year to be clearly on the side of Russia. And, you know, I could enumerate the ways in which he has done that. But unfortunately, I wish I could say yes. you know, Zelensky has agreed to an unconditional ceasefire seven times in the last year. Putin refuses to even agree to a ceasefire so negotiations can progress. These negotiations that are going on at the moment, unfortunately, and I'm on the record many times as saying it before, will go nowhere.
Okay. On that depressing note, we'll have to bring it to a close. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Cormac Smith, Ukraine expert and member of the Defence on the Brink advocacy group. And of course, Jason Corcoran, Russia expert and the author of the forthcoming book, Leaving Russia, How Putin Forced a Nation's Future to Flee.
Breakfast Business with Joe Lynham on News Talk.
With Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland, helping people across Ireland invest, plan and grow their wealth with confidence. Cantor Fitzgerald Ireland is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.